Welcome back, listeners, to Law Out Loud. Here we are already at episode 3, and once again, a junior researcher from Erasmus Graduate School of Law will discuss their PhD research topic with an expert in the field. Today, we have with us Matthijs Giltjes and Piba Teboom. This time, the subject is financial regulation, and our junior researcher, Matthijs, will talk about high-frequency trading in financial markets. Hello, Matthijs. Thank you for joining us, and thank you for bringing such an interesting topic to the table.
Hi, Liam.
The theme running through all episodes in this series of Law Out Loud is whether, and if so, how, the law should respond to changes in society, technology, and/or the environment. In the case of high-frequency trading, clearly it's the advancement in computer technology and the development of complex algorithms which have enabled this type of high-volume, high-speed trading. In the course of his research, Matthijs has identified a number of problems or potential problems with this practice. And he will pose those problems to his senior today, Piba Teboom. Piba is an expert in financial markets and financial regulation, having spent 6 years working for the Dutch financial regulator, the Autoriteit Financiële Markten, and is now Secretary General of the European Principal Traders Association, a group which, amongst other roles, advocates for investors, some of which may engage in high-frequency trading. As such, we anticipate that Piba may have some robust responses to the issues identified by Matthijs, or maybe he won't, and maybe Matthijs will leave him lost for words. We shall see. Either way, Piba, thank you very much for joining us.
Great being here, thanks.
And Matthijs, it's over to you.
Thanks, Liam. Thank you for the introduction. So hello, everyone. My name is Matthijs Giltjes, and today Piba Teboom and I will be talking about high-frequency trading, the algorithm-driven modern way of trading stocks, futures, currencies, and various other financial instruments and products. I believe that a lot of people are not aware of the current state of how trading takes place, and that many still think that trading takes place in muggle-filled trading pits, where one Gordon Gekko lookalike tries to outsmart or outrun the others. However, nowadays, most trading takes place by means of computers, and the traditional trading floors are ruins from the past that merely serve as props for movies and news bulletins. Trading now commonly takes place electronically and automatically by algorithms. A subset of algorithmic trading that has attracted ample attention in both academic scholarship and the media is high-frequency trading. In my research, I investigate whether high-frequency trading gives rise to more advanced, newer, and perhaps less easily detectable forms of market abuse, with which I refer to market manipulation and insider dealing. I ultimately look for the more adequate regulation of high-frequency trading from a market abuse perspective. Piba Teboom is the Secretary General of FIA EPTA and is here to share his perspective on high-frequency trading. Piba, could you please tell us a bit more about who you are and what you do?
Sure, Matthijs. So, Piba Teboom, I'm the Secretary General for FIA European Principal Traders Association, and we are the European industry group for principal trading firms, perhaps better known as market makers or liquidity providers. Some people also call them prop firms. So these are all firms that trade with our own money, with our own capital, to provide liquidity in financial markets. We have 29 members from various European countries. They're based in the Czech Republic, in Germany, in Ireland, the Netherlands, and the UK. And our members provide liquidity in different types of instruments, shares, listed derivatives, bonds, exchange-traded funds, ETFs, and others. So my own background is in financial regulation. I used to work for the AFM, as mentioned, and currently I work with my members to advocate for well-functioning markets that enable our members to provide liquidity in an efficient and effective way. So what does it mean to trade for your own risk with your own money? It really means that my members do not have external clients. They do not manage assets for third parties, for clients. They are not like banks. They do not take deposits. They purely trade in the markets using their own capital. But that does not mean that they do not provide a service, because they do. And that service is the provision of liquidity, which is to enable end investors to trade efficiently because there is always a counterparty, the liquidity provider, with whom the end investor can trade. So that helps end investors to execute their own investment strategies, to manage their risk, and it has helped to bring greater transparency to the market and lower cost. And indeed, technology plays an important role here because my members are essentially IT companies. But as you mentioned, a subset of algorithmic trading is high-frequency trading, and likewise, a subset of my members could be described as high-frequency traders.
All right, that sounds pretty impressive. You obviously have way more experience in the practice of high-frequency trading than I do. Thanks again for being here. I really appreciate it, Biba. So we have already referred to high-frequency trading a couple of times now, but what is it and why is it important to know about? In my view, high-frequency trading is, in a nutshell at least, the hyper-fast trading of vast amounts of financial instruments and products, like stocks or shares, with little to no human intervention, where the orders are initiated, sent, routed, executed, modified, and or cancelled by computers programmed with algorithms, which are basically mathematical codes or instructions. With these computers and algos, high-frequency traders try to develop and implement the best trading strategies. They do so with the highest degree of proclivity in terms of, amongst others, data science, econometrics, and technology, trying to gain an edge over the other traders and systematically beat the markets. Both academics and the media also often make the suggestion that high-frequency traders always win. Biba, do you recognize these claims made about high-frequency trading, and do you think they are actually true?
Well, I think it's important that we are really clear about what we are talking about. So we are talking here about sophisticated trading technology. And I think it's important to remember that that technology is now being used by all sophisticated professionals in the market. So that includes the banks and the brokers that trade for themselves and that are brokers for institutional end investors. And also it is used by some of my members. But in that sense, it is not something that is used only by one community. It's used by all professional participants. So that is one. Secondly, I think it's really important to be aware that it's really a technology. It is not a strategy in itself. And looking at the actual strategies that principal trading firms, my members, use, that strategy is liquidity provision, i.e. being continually a counterparty to other investors who want or need to trade, and typically that takes place in the form of providing so-called two-sided liquidity. So that means that a market maker or liquidity provider is continuously buying and selling instruments from and to other market participants, so being on two sides of the market at the same time. So if you apply that strategy, it's also important to remember that these types of firms do not have a view on the direction of the market. They have no view whether American stocks will become more expensive or will become cheaper. They're not trying to do all kinds of complex trade between those. They just want to be in the market buying and selling. And actually, their profit comes not from the changes in market price, but it comes from the small spread that sits between the buy and the sell price. So that is also where their profit derives from. And so when people say, oh, these firms are very successful, then you should think that their profit comes from profitable trades in the context of loss-making trades. So a market maker will be successful if more trades are winning than losing, but suggesting that all trades are winning is just not giving the correct picture. And then what does it mean if you are a market maker in that way? It means that you are buying and selling thousands of instruments across different markets all day long, and each of these trades can be loss-making for you. So it is really very important that you manage all of these trades well, that the prices that you put out to the market are the correct ones at any time of the day, meaning that you have to adjust them all the time, mm-hmm. and that is where the technology comes in. And this technology is really something that has grown organically in the market and that has increased with the growth of computing power in the past 15 to 20 years. The real beginnings were in the 1980s, and of course it has accelerated as more technology became available and could be used, as granted everywhere else in society these days. And it's really nothing more than using computing power to evaluating instruments more efficiently so that you can price them better and so that you can put out better prices for your counterparties in the market. So just some points to basically demystify this term, because I think that leads to wrong conclusions.
What term are you referring to right now?
High-frequency trading as something that sounds very mythical, but in fact is nothing more than the use of technology for trading.
Right. Yeah, I agree that high-frequency trading and algorithmic trading is part of a natural evolution of trading and trading platforms maturing into the modern and future trading eras. When I said they always win, I also get they don't win on every trade, of course, but high-frequency traders are extremely profitable. And I also think that a lot of the members of the audience, and in particular the Dutch members who listen or view the late-night show Zondag met Lubach, might have heard that high-frequency trading companies have fared extremely well since the outbreak of the COVID-19 virus. And one Dutch firm even raked in a trade revenue of 495 million euros in the first quarter of 2020. Moreover, some listeners may have heard about the January 2020 report called Quantifying the High-Frequency Trading Arms Race, issued by the UK Financial Market Supervisor, the FCA, or Financial Conduct Authority. And this report suggests that high-frequency trading might increase trading costs for other investors, because their trades are outrun by high-frequency traders. Do you agree with these suggestions that high-frequency traders profit from market distress and typically profit from trade information exhibited by other traders? And additionally, why do you think have these traders been even more successful than usual these last months?
Well, I understand that if large numbers are being mentioned in the media, that might sound surprising at first glance when there is little context given. So I think it is important to look at what are we talking about here, and I think there are two points to be made. Just starting with the recent volatility, so the big price movements that we saw, especially at the beginning of the COVID crisis in March. So when it is reported that some of my members made a lot of money in that time, you can ask yourself, why was that happening? And my answer would be that the service that they were providing to the market, i.e. providing liquidity, was in particular at that time one that other market participants were really looking after, that they really needed. And that was indeed the case, because there was a sudden, very big market move. Certain institutional investors and other investors had to liquidate positions, and it was important for them that they could do that at the current market prices. So one of the things that I think were really within this big crisis still going well was that there was a central point of price formation, which were the exchanges, and my members were the providers of liquidity on those markets. So the profits that are being mentioned are just a reflection of the service that my members were able to provide at that time. And when there is less volatility, when the markets are more quiet, typically also there is less need for that service, and also then, the profits are lower. That's mm-hmm. just the consequence of how these things go. Then secondly, is the activity of liquidity providers like my members, is that a burden to the market? My answer would be clearly no, because what they have done is to really make trading much cheaper for end investors. Just in the past 10 years alone, The trading costs have gone down by some 50%, which is a great benefit to the ultimate end investors like the pension participants and the individual retail investors who trade through institutions. And I would like to contrast the current market structure where technology is used to bring efficiency to the market that we used to have, for example, in the 1980s, and everyone still remembers in some way the market crash of 1987, where prices were going down very much, and people wanted to sell, but the market makers, who at that time were the big dealer banks, just didn't want to trade, so they didn't pick up the phone. So then you really have a problem if you need to trade, but you cannot trade, whereas now we have a much more efficient system where everyone who needed to trade was able to trade and could trade with one of my members. So in that sense, we've really progressed.
Right, so I definitely agree that there should be efficient liquidity provision, of course. Just to make sure, do you say that a profit of 490, or a revenue, or a profit, a trade profit of 495 million euros in one quarter is just a reflection of providing a liquidity service? Why are these intermediaries necessary? Why don't just sell these financial instruments to the end user?
Well, first of all, so you were talking earlier about the trade revenue. That is not the profit. The profit was significantly lower in this for this firm that you were referencing. And so suppose that we would install a market structure as you suggest, then there would be no counterparty to actually take on the risk that was that people had on their desks. And what liquidity providers do is that they have tools to hedge the risk so that they are able to take on the inventory, because that is what they are doing. And just selling it in a crisis to retail investors who also want to sell would be the basis for a catastrophe, if you ask me.
So, given that trading nowadays takes place in an extreme velocity, high-frequency traders typically act within the millisecond and microsecond framework, meaning a thousandth and a millionth of a second. And given that hundreds of thousands of orders are initiated, sent, routed, executed, modified, and cancelled within those extremely granular timeframes, urges, I would say, us to reflect on this relatively new way of trading. Because in the zero-sum game of trading, whenever someone wins, another loses. And although many people might think they are at a safe distance from what happens on these securities markets, they should realize that their pension savings are being invested in these markets, and that the companies they work for might be listed on these markets. Considering that the supervisory authorities, like the Dutch Autoriteit Financiële Markten, must monitor billions and billions of orders a day, making identifying and detecting market manipulation probably already an extremely challenging task, especially given the fact that trading takes place on a fragmented European trading landscape, and monitoring commonly takes place on the individual member states level, it could be argued that the high-frequency traders have the capacities and resources to manipulate prices without being detected by the supervisory authorities. They typically earn a cent or less per trade, but turn this into good money due to the sheer volume of their trades. Hence, if they, for example, are able to increase, manipulate, so to say, the price against which they want to sell by just a cent, this can add to a substantial profit. Do you agree with me that high-frequency trading might pose risks that are currently overlooked, such as an increased risk of malpractice, like market manipulation?
Yeah, so first to clarify on the speed, because actually what we see now is that many firms trade even more quickly, so even in the nanosecond space, so 1 billionth of a second. But the fact that things go faster does not necessarily mean that they are also more dangerous. And I think that's true in many other parts of life as well. So what has happened in the market is that markets have become electronic and that they have been placed in formalized systems. And the big upside from that is that it creates an audit trail which you can monitor and where you can know what has happened. And you can also replay what has happened to see the interaction between different actions and different markets or different products. So I would argue that actually the market has become more safe and has become effective and efficient to monitor it than was the case previously. So focusing on the activities of my members, they trade on the public markets, i.e. exchanges, which are highly regulated, as my members are, as regulated investment firms, meaning that everything that they do, both their trading activity, but also their internal systems and practices, can and are being audited and supervised by the regulator. And the regulator can request each and any type of information from my members and also from other regulated entities in the market. So what happens here is that whenever you develop a trading strategy, that needs to be done in a very structured way, which creates an audit trail from the very beginning of when you design the strategy all the way to when you actually develop your algorithm to when you put that into the market. Once you start doing that, it creates signals, which are your trading orders and transactions, which you yourself have to monitor through a market abuse surveillance system. It is then also monitored by market abuse surveillance systems at different levels of the market, the level of the clearing firm through which you trade, the exchange, and ultimately the regulator, the supervisor. And it should be remembered that these systems are also very sophisticated. They have no trouble in consuming huge amounts of data, and increasingly also they are using even AI systems as well for that purpose. So you mentioned the Dutch AFM, which is certainly a regulator that is very experienced with surveilling this type of activity and which has invested greatly, as have done other regulators, in order to be able to surveil the market and see if there is illegal behavior taking place. So in that sense, I would not say there is reason for concern.
So, Piba, you don't think there might be a hazard of an uneven balance between the supervisory authorities and these high-frequency trading firms in terms of, for example, human resource management and other resources? You don't think that supervisory authorities would just get an annual budget, of course, and have a certain amount of wages that they can attribute to their employees, are not overwhelmed or outbalanced by high-frequency traders attracting all these quants, these super smart econometricians and mathematicians and, well, all these kinds of people, and have basically unlimited resources? You don't see any potential threats in these disbalances or possible disbalances?
Well, you're overstating a little bit how much resource there is available with my members, but just other than that, it is, of course, important that the regulator, the supervisor, is well-resourced. Mm-hmm. I think in the developed markets here in Europe, taking the Netherlands as an example, that there are no problems there. The AFM is well-resourced and, as I said, is able to undertake sophisticated supervision of the markets. I think also, just to put it in perspective, the objectives of a regulator and a financial market participants are, of course, different when we're talking about technology, because a firm has to trade in the live market, and if you make mistakes there, then you lose a lot of money. Mm-hmm. When you are a supervisor, you can consume the data that has been traded in the market, so ex post, after the fact, and then you can analyze it, but you have more time at hand to actually do that. And as I said, modern market surveillance systems do not have a problem with consuming a lot of data because of the computing power that we have available currently. So the issue is more, are supervisors able to understand the various strategies that firms are trading? My answer to that would be yes, because even though implementing the strategies is, well, quite a lot of work, the underlying strategies are not as difficult or sophisticated as perhaps people would think from would think externally.
Mm-hmm.
They're not that difficult to understand for a well-educated regulator, which the AFM certainly is.
In any case, assuming that the market abuse regulation, which actually bans market manipulation, contains rather broad and arguably vague definitions of market manipulation, which might also be based on yesteryear's legal statutes and economic reality, some legal scholars often contend that it will be extremely difficult for supervisory authorities to sanction malpractice exhibited by high-frequency traders that actually constitutes market manipulation. In other words, they contend that the anti-market manipulation framework is not suited for the current and future trading eras. Furthermore, they contend that should a supervisory authority, after having spent months or even years of examining data, actually detect and subsequently fine one or more high-frequency traders for malpractice that constitutes market manipulation, this hardly contributes to legal certainty, as these traders have already developed newer and perhaps even more complex trading strategies. Are you not afraid of the emergence of a cat-and-mouse game?
Yeah, so just to be clear, we have in Europe a very recent, actually, market abuse regime, the so-called market abuse regulation, which has been developed following the financial crisis about 10 years ago, and the regime is now, what is it, 5-6 years old.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually now being reviewed by the European supervisory authorities and will be reviewed further by the European Commission. And what was very clear from the review report by the European Securities and Markets Authority is that European supervisors see some areas where things might get tweaked or improved, but no fundamental changes are envisioned. And I would argue rightfully so, because I would not describe that regime as vague. Like other parts of European regulation, it is at least partially principles-based, but I would argue that actually that is part of the effectiveness of the regime, because it very clearly sets out what type of concepts or types of strategies are forbidden. And it should also be remembered that exchange trading has been around for a very long time, and the types of strategies that you can apply to manipulate the market also have been well established. So the only thing that can be done differently is how you implement existing manipulative strategies. And that's where your concern also would come from, I suppose, i.e. in using more modern technology to manipulate the market. So certainly it is clear, and my members are clear about this as well, that this is illegal.
Mm-hmm.
This should not happen. Firms should do everything to prevent it from happening. But where there are persons in the market who consciously want to abuse, they should be punished. But we should also not forget that there is a gray area where perhaps things are less clear, so that those types of gray areas are not really fit for enforcement, because it's perhaps not so clear if it is actually illegal.
Mm-hmm.
But a supervisor can certainly have a view that certain activity is not something that they want to see in their market. So that is where more informal types of enforcement come in. And I mentioned before that the regulator is monitoring what happens in the market, and so likewise are other market participants, including the exchanges and including firms. So where there is activity seen that you don't want as a supervisor, you have the ability to just contact a market participant and tell them, what are you doing? Why are you doing this? We don't really like this. And experience has shown that that has a great deterrent effect. And you were talking about resources earlier. This is much more resource efficient in terms of a supervisory strategy than a very long-winding legal process. And I I know that you are a lawyer, and perhaps that is where you have more comfort. But if we're talking more about what is effective, I would argue that in many cases, informal enforcement is more efficient and more effective than long, winding enforcement.
There's one last topic I would like to discuss, which concerns inside information and insider dealing, also banned by the market abuse regulation. Pivotal to high-frequency traders is low latency, meaning that they try to get rid of anything that might slow down the speed of their trading activities. Accordingly, they literally place their trading computers next to or in close proximity of the exchange's matching engines, known as co-location or proximity hosting. And they constantly rapid-fire gazillions of orders, known as pinging, in order to discover patterns in trading behavior exhibited by other traders. It could be argued that this kind of information constitutes inside information in the sense of the market abuse regulation, because only a select few can retrieve this information, and hence that trading on the basis of this information constitutes unlawful insider dealing. After all, trading on the basis of this information might go against the pillars that the market abuse regulation aims to protect, being market integrity, investor confidence, and a level playing field.
Yeah, so let's be clear about what we mean by inside information, because for these discussions, which can be highly charged, it's really important to be crystal clear on what we are talking about. So in the situation that you were mentioning with this proximity hosting, this is nothing more than that the hardware of professional market participants sits physically very close to the hardware of the exchange. So mm-hmm. Going back to what I said in the beginning, this is something that some of my members do, but also the brokers and the banks do that likewise. So in that sense, this is nothing very special. It fits in how markets are currently organized as computer-based markets. So then it's important that no party is advantaged over another. And let's be very clear, the European regulatory requirements, financial law as it applies to market participants, is very clear that every market participant no market participant can have an advantage beyond a certain point. Mm-hmm. At a certain point, everything is the same for everyone, and that is true for information going into the exchange matching engine and going out of it. So where we're talking about information coming out of the exchange matching engine, once it goes over that threshold, it is basically in the public domain. So in that case, it can never be inside information. And inside information and abusing it is really a situation where you have clients. And in this type of situation, my members do not have a client. So in that case, it cannot under any way be considered insider dealing. There is another area that we can discuss, and I think that's where these types of terms are used a bit more casually, but I would argue incorrectly, where people observe other types of problematic scenarios, which I would argue is related to how the market structure is designed. So what a market is that it is a way to bring different market participants together who have different interests. Some people want to sell, other people want to buy. So there is a natural conflict of interest mm-hmm. built in. And what a market needs to do is to manage those different interests so that it has a benefit for all and that it takes place in a fair and orderly way. So in some cases, there are market participants who try to execute strategies that need a certain type of speed, or they need to do that in a certain smart way. And if you're perhaps you have the technology, but you're not using it correctly, then you can get burned. And that's what we've seen with some market participants who thought they were doing the smart thing, but it turned out that that was not the case. So just to make a comparison, if you take a Tesla, that's a great car to get at your destination, but not necessarily to compete in a Formula E race.
Right. Well, Peter, I think we both agree that we need to stay alert and thoroughly analyze what is exactly going on the securities markets. To make sure that malpractice can be effectively combated, it is necessary that the bans on market manipulation and insider dealing are well defined and tailored to the current and future trading eras.
No, certainly. So that is certainly something that we agree on. Markets are important for the real economy, for the end investor, and we need to make sure that they are safe, fair, and orderly. And what I hope that I've made clear is that technology can actually be a tool that helps to those goals, and certainly not one that detracts from it.
Mm-hmm. Peter, thanks again for joining me in this podcast. I hope we have achieved to provide the audience with a clearer understanding of high-frequency trading and the possible risks and opportunities related to it. I, for one, have certainly learned a lot today.
Well, thank you both for a very lively discussion. I think I could see it from both sides. So putting aside illegal or fraudulent behavior, I can recognize that, you know, even absent that, high-frequency trading is a practice which disrupts the market. But after this discussion, I'm sort of left wondering whether those undertaking high-frequency trading are simply acting rationally and skillfully, having made a sensible investment in those technologies, in which case perhaps it's the rest of the market which is the cause of the problems, because it hasn't quite caught up yet. And then I hear about the benefits, so increased efficiency, increased liquidity, and of course much lower transaction costs. And as someone with a background in both law and economics, those things do really appeal to me. On the other hand, I think there are further questions that have to be asked. So clearly, this market volatility, even if it lasts only for some transition period during which the market adopts these techniques wholesale, well, that volatility may harm some. And I think we want to know more about who that might harm, in what way, and to what extent. If it's a large institutional investor that hasn't yet adopted these technologies or hasn't yet properly adopted these technologies, well, then why should I pity them? That's just market discipline, isn't it? If, on the other hand, there are smaller scale, genuinely vulnerable investors who couldn't have known better, well, the lawyer in me thinks these people do need some more protection. And if so, we have to ask, what protection? But that is a question for Matthijs to consider going forward. Next time, here on Law Out Loud, we'll be considering whether, and if so, how, courts and the law should use new forms of dispute resolution made possible by advances in information technology. We hope to be joined for that by Evangelia Nisciotti and Professor Louis Vischer. Thank you very much to both of you, Matthijs and Piba, for the arguments which you've presented today. And to our listeners, we hope you join us again next time on Law Out Loud.